On this edition of the Car Cham podcast.
I'm like a child at a funeral. It's funeral eve. That's how excited I am.
Yeah, we can't really pick a winner. And I think, well, if I've bothered to read four pages of your text with the question, is this the world's best car or the whatever? I expect a damned answer at the end.
Yeah.
You know, give me an 6,000 answer.
6,000 words of rhetoric and then they never actually come up with anything at the end. So should I buy it or not?
Oh, go on, Tony. Tell us about every single generation of the Toyota Camry. It'll be fascinating. You know, it really will be.
Yeah. I'll see you next week then.
You've started doing your little embroidery project there, haven't you?
Hello, and welcome back to Car Chum. Thanks for your messages and interactions through the website. Always appreciated. You can join in anytime at www.car-chum.com or find us on all the usual socials. Just search Car Chum. Anyway, that's not why I'm here. I just popped in to explain that this episode is our quest to define the best road car. I only say that as it's just not that obvious in the first few minutes what we're doing. If indeed it ever is. Here we go then.
Hooray!
for what exactly are we hooraying?
I don't know. I just feel like we need to do a hooray to get the blood really, really pumping.
Right.
Here we go. Yeah. So let's lull you into a bedtime full sense of security with another episode of Car Chum.
Make it sound all nice and relaxing right at the beginning.
Hooray!
Sit tight, sit comfortable. You're in for a hell of a ride.
Let's not promise what we can't deliver.
In terms of a hell of a ride, that's kind of what I thought we were going to talk about today.
Well, yes. Now, this has come from, and I'm going to touch on this car again in a moment, but I can't even remember what it was I was watching. It's one of those inane online TV shows on cars, and they had their pick, or they mentioned a certain car, mm-hmm. and then they said, you know, oh yeah, we both the hosts agreed it was the best road car ever made.
Okay.
And I thought, I don't particularly agree, and I'd be interested to see what your take on it was. But first off, I've got, this isn't the what they chose, but I was thinking, and I couldn't come up with a better one. So my choice here, it's a four-seater car. It's loved by young and old, male and female. It's a perfect city car. It's as fast as a Ferrari and a Cobra. Self-driving. It floats. It fights bulls. It can split in half. It fell in love with a Lancia. Yes, it's Herbie. Herbie the love bug.
yeah.
The Beetle.
Yeah.
But this is a very, very broad palette. So obviously we're going to come up with other ideas, and I think there's no right wrong answer. I just think let's come up with some suggestions and see what we make of them, and if we come to a conclusion in the end, fantastic.
I've read more and more magazine articles recently and online articles that sort of dither about welcome to Car Chum, that dither about and then at the end say, yeah, we can't really pick a winner. And I think, well, I mean, not that it really matters. I mean, a winner doesn't matter two hoots, does it? But if I've bothered to read four pages of your text with the question, is this the world's best car or the whatever, I expect a damned answer at the end.
Yeah.
You know, give me an 6,000 answer.
6,000 words of rhetoric and then they never actually come up with anything at the end. So should I buy it or not? Do I want this car? Is it good? Will it kill me? Can I afford it? Is usually the only question that gets answered.
You'd already suggested this idea, actually, you know, best road car ever. But then completely coincidental to that, we got some friends showing off who aren't you, and they're heading off on holiday.
I'm not a friend.
don't overblow
work colleague at best.
and they keep sending these photos, you know, what's in the WhatsApp group, you know, guess where we are, which I quite enjoy, because it's like looking at people's, you know, holiday slides in the 1970s, but at least it's got a game to it and you're not pinned into their dark living room for 4 hours looking at Joan and Bob sitting on the beach in Torremolinos in 1982. Anyway, so they're often, but they're not really into cars at all, but they're doing this massive road trip that we knew nothing about. And they're, yeah, down through France, obviously, coming from the UK. So they're sort of Strasbourg, you know, kind of bottom right side of France, and then across into Italy, Milan, I think. And they've shown me sort of sat nav routes on the car, all the wiggly hairpin, you know, hairpin roads, and the fantastic tunnels, sent videos of the tunnels and whatnot. And I thought, wow, that looks amazing. I really wish I was doing it. But not in what they're doing it in. You know, right. Sit tight, it's going to be a favorite for you. A BMW X3. So that's an SUV.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even a big SUV.
No, 2 liter diesel, four cylinder. Which I'm sure very competent for the family of four, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it got me to thinking, and I did message this. God, that looks wonderful, guys. I wish I was doing it in, and I wish I was doing it in ... And that kind of got me to thinking. So I came up with an answer, which I will give you at the end, because it's not one of the three I picked.
Okay. Well, I sort of picked several. So I've got a list of stuff, but the kicking off with what this show that I was watching suggested was the best road car of all time was the McLaren F1.
No, that's not. I'm out before we start. So
1992 to 1998, 106 built. This was, I sort of see where they're coming from, because I initially thought, no, I can think up loads more of that. But you sort of picture an F1, can't you? The McLaren F1, it's the three seater. And something that never struck me until I actually went onto McLaren's website. This is a car that has no aerofoils or spoilers.
Give me a second. Doesn't have anything, does it? Doesn't have anything on the back?
No. The reason being, the sole design ethic behind it was make it grip the road at high speed, make it powerful, make it light. So they built it and designed it so it didn't need aerodynamic aids to hold it down, get it through the air. They designed it to be so good, it didn't need spoilers. And that struck me that like a slap in the face. I thought, oh.
Never noticed. Yeah.
No. The scales have been lifted from mine eyes.
Mm.
I thought, a biblical reference for you.
Very, very good, Mike. Very good.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I actually don't even know if that's even in the proper context, but it sounded good for a minute there, didn't it? So, interestingly enough, and I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail because I think everybody knows this. It's a pretty popular car. Entirely handmade, 6.1 litre BMW V12, putting out 620 brake. Weighs 2,509 pounds, which is a little over a ton. And March 98, the world's fastest production car at 240.1 miles per hour. What else? Six-speed, high-speed stability, first carbon fiber monocoque chassis, and was designed after chief engineer Gordon Murray drove a Honda NSX and thought, ooh, this is good. We need to be better than the NSX, which I think is another potential contender there for best road car ever. Mm. But the F1, I thought exactly the same as you, and I don't know why I discounted it. I'm not saying it is the best road car ever. I've never driven one. People who have seem to think it's utterly wonderful. But why? Let me sort of ask you why you immediately had the same reaction as me, which is nah.
Well, I think I automatically reject stuff that is totally unattainable. Instantly for any best category, because best for whom? Well, Rowan Atkinson and, you know, and however many other people. How many did you say were made?
106 made between 92 and 98. So, engine bay lined in gold.
Well, now I'm in.
Computer controlled air brakes.
Are they really? Look.
I'm intriguing you a little bit. No, you are.
Because I never actually spend an awful lot of time either reading about or looking at or thinking about that kind of car.
Me neither. Yeah. No.
Because you so rarely see them. Yeah. They're engineering masterpieces. They're absolutely amazing. And, you know, when you give a specification like that, I think, wow, amazing. But does that make it the best road car ever? Well, no, it doesn't.
And I will counter that with, I had a conversation with a friend yesterday who's not massively into cars, but he'd just come in, he'd sort of pop round to something totally non-car related. Mm-hmm. But he said, oh, I've just seen a McLaren. All right, you know, which one? I don't know. It's one of the new ones, you know, but I thought, oh, no, nice. It's a McLaren.
Yeah.
He said, and then I looked them up and realized they're about £2 million.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us fall into this thing of, oh, you know, it's a McLaren. It's a little bit above a Lotus, but it's not quite as good as a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. And they're actually really, really, really good. And I've perhaps fallen into that.
Oh, no.
That trap of thinking, oh, you know, they're a bit Lotus-y.
No,
and
never.
They're not, are they?
never had that thought process. No. Me, it says Ron Dennis setting up, you know, the factory at Weybridge or wherever it is up there, you know, southwest London, or southwest of London, I should say. And fabulous sparkling facility and expensive and about prestigious, but yeah, it's probably the right word. No, I don't have that. Don't have that. that is it a Lotus on steroids thing at all? No, never had that thought.
But you still wouldn't consider it as a contender. Was the best road car ever made?
Well, no, because to me, it's not a road car. None of these things are road cars. They're fabulous. I was going to say sports cars. That underdoes it. Supercars that can drive on the road. In the same way that you could homologate, I'm sure, to some extent, I don't know whether anyone's ever done it, but an F1 car, you know, you could put...
Yes, somebody did.
Yeah, headlights,
indicators. It was not like a new one, but
sure.
Somebody did.
Sure.
Yeah, it's, headlights, indicators, yeah. A fog light on the back sort of thing, yes.
Exactly. Yeah, because some of the tests are absolutely wonderful. They're a pain in the bum for most people, you know, who are restoring a classic or whatever, but if you've got the money, they become sort of laughable, you know, so you end up with a Halfords accessory light from 1984 screwed onto an F1 car, and there you go, it's road legal. Yeah, what a load
door
of nonsense
from a marina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What a load of nonsense. but hang on, let me finish my point. You could homologate that personally, or IVA it, or whatever the expression would be, and you end up with a road car. Is it the fastest road car, you know, in a straight line? Yeah, sure. Maybe not acceleratively, but top speed, etc. You know, is it good on corners? Well, probably not, actually, because it doesn't have any suspension to deal mm-hmm. with the problems. So, nah, it wouldn't. You need compliance, Mike. You need compliance to get round bumpy corners with bad cameras.
Okay. when you're not on a perfectly brilliant, smooth racetrack, I concede your point there.
Useless.
And I'm going to go smashing straight into my next choice here because it is related and because it will be easier than coming back to it in 10 minutes and going all through this again. my next choice, the McLaren Speedtail, the car that effectively replaced the F1. Now, the Speedtail, more or less the same engine, but a really long, long, oddly enough, Speedtail. On the back of the car. So sort of picture an F1, but with a long, long tail on it. And I will put up a photo, but it's a fabulous looking car, which I'm going for looks more than anything here, but just going to throw out a few facts. So virtually the same 4-litre twin turbo, but it's a hybrid. So the hybrid bit puts out 310 brake horsepower. Mm-hmm. And you think, yeah. Whatever. Okay. And it recharges the battery as it goes. The 4-litre V8 twin turbo puts out a little bit more than that. Mm. And if I could find it, I'd wow you with what that figure is.
No, this is...
It is.
This is good.
1,040 BHP.
Right, okay. So Veyron territory, yeah.
It's got no mirrors because obviously they increase the drag. Yeah. It's got carbon fiber covers over the front wheels, again, reduce the drag. It's another one, 106 built, 2.1 million. To reduce weight, it's got electrochromic glass. You push a button and it darkens the glass because then they didn't have to put sun visors in. And my favourite statistic, and then I'm going to get off this subject, I mean, obviously, other than the fact it's built in the UK, is 0 to 186 miles an hour in 12.8 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's what I mean. It's brisk, isn't it? Yeah.
It's quite rapid, yeah.
What's 180 there? So 300 kilometres, is it?
Yes, that's basically where they've got that figure from, I think, is 300 and whatever it is, kilometres. 848 foot-pounds of torque.
Wow.
So that's just to go, see, I occasionally stumble off into the realm of moderns, but that's the last time I'll be saying hybrid for a while.
I was going to say, some of your description there, I was thinking, oh, wait a minute, if you hadn't told me that it's the McLaren replacement, this is, what is this, Toyota Prius? not quite.
They cost a little bit less than 2.1 million.
Yeah, and they've made a few more than 106 of them. Yeah.
Oddly enough, I will mention that because you've said Prius, it's actually on my list later on of cars that people have suggested is one of the best road cars ever made is the Toyota Prius, and the only mark down it got was you can't fit a tow bar to it. I'm going to shut up for a couple of minutes. The floor is yours, Tony. Go for
it.
Well,
it's a nice soft landing, actually.
But anyway,
it was a nice soft landing, actually, from hybrids and supercars, you know, the world of McLaren and three seaters.
Hyundai Pony. Go on, say Hyundai Pony.
You ready again? No, it's better than that.
Better.
Toyota.
Yes.
Toyota Camry.
Toyota Camry.
Toyota Camry. I am proposing the Toyota Camry as one of the finest road cars that has ever existed.
Good Lord.
I'm quite proud to do so.
Can't wait to hear this. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, look, the engine bays are gold plated.
They're 186 miles an hour in 12 seconds.
Yeah, there are no spoilers.
Are there? Well, none of them.
Well, there might be, I suppose. But anyway, the similarities end there. Look,
I got one good thing. You're not going to steal that from me.
So the Toyota Camry hails from 1982, all the way back to 82. Although that was its first generation, it did have a sort of a warm up period. Mm-hmm. Go on, Tony. Tell us about every single generation of the Toyota Camry. It'll be fascinating. You know, it really will be.
Yeah. I'll see you next week then.
You've started doing your little embroidery project there, haven't you?
I'm actually Googling what a Toyota Camry is in case I'm thinking of something different, because I can't believe that what I think it is what you think it is. So one of us is wrong.
It started actually with a just a badge, and it was on the Celica Camry.
Oh, I see what you mean, yes.
Celica Camry, which was a front-engined, rear-wheel driven, square... steel-wheeled Japanese car, you know, of the late 70s. You can imagine. I quite like the look of them, actually, at that period, but you don't see many of them.
That thing.
Yeah, no. That's a Camry.
Yeah. Is that what you're talking
Camry.
About?
I mean, look, it's a bland four-door saloon from Japan, from Toyota. Yes, it's probably a Camry. They made the first generation in Japan, unsurprisingly, and moved it to front-wheel drive. And it's always been front-wheel drive, the Camry, with an exciting range of 1.8 or 2-litre engines. And they started some exports. They did start exporting these things. And this is where the legend of the Camry began. The second generation is the first one that you would have any familiarity with, really, in North America or Europe. This is where it really began to take off from sort of 86 onwards.
They did an estate model, and I cannot find a picture of one that isn't dented and rusty. On the whole of Google, every one of them looks like it's just been used and abused and utterly sort of left in a street for 20 years.
Left fallow. Well, no, but that is why. That is why I'm proposing it, because they're so darned good. You know, you buy one, servicing is purely optional. It will continue to work forever anyway. They're amazing. This second generation, rounded edges, also offering a V6 engine for the first time as well, which of course, being Toyota, was a rather nice V6 engine, all fuel injected. And this is where I personally came across my first Toyota Camry. And I think you'll agree, Mike, you never forget the first time you see a Toyota Camry. Your first Toyota Camry
I'm trying
is
to forget
moment.
The first time I saw one, which was about a minute and a half ago.
Excuse me.
You all right?
Yeah, and no, I'm getting overexcited at the
prospects of the Mark III Camry.
Wait a minute, I'm not there yet.
I haven't looked at that yet. I can barely contain. I'm like a child at a funeral. It's funeral eve. That's how excited I am about seeing what a Mark III Camry looks like. But don't let me rush you through it, Tony. Tell me more about the Mark II.
Rounded edges, V6. We knew someone who was about 98 who owned one of these things. I was only a youngster at the time, and I was impressed. This guy had the V6. I don't think it had leather. I think it had that sort of slightly nasty Japanese velour interior, but it had aircon, which is like, oh, whoa!
A jacket's got leather.
he owned this thing, and I was impressed with it. He'd owned it from new, but I think he was so blind, he'd taken this brand new Toyota Camry and screwed onto the front wing a piece of metal, a metal bracket, onto which he'd applied a bright yellow tennis ball on each corner, so that when he was driving it, he could see the corners. I mean, talking about dangerous. This is the same guy that went to a neighbour's house and kindly started brushing off their BMW because it had got dusty. He thought he was doing a nice thing, brushing it off with a broom. Old people, eh? Old people.
You're really selling me on this Camry idea.
Third version got uglier. Fourth one got a bit better. Nicer front, grim rear. The fifth generation had an enormous...
Bringing up my nickname in college there, thank you.
The fifth grim generation got an enormous arse and small wheels. It looked terrible. The sixth generation, I also had a bit of personal connection with this. We're back to 06 to 13. They made this little beauty. Hire car heaven. And I had one, a 2.4 auto with a whole 158 brake horsepower. But it was a good car. It was a good car. You know, I mean, as a hire car, it worked absolutely fine, you know, because it worked and because the aircon worked well, because the seats were comfortable and because it didn't use that much fuel. And, you know, it just tick, 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 tick. First hybrid came in after that. Then they got a bit uglier again. And now the most recent one, 2017 onwards, Toyota's taken an exciting stance on design, and they've put a set of Venetian blinds on the front as a grill.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think to that? But I think they've nailed the interior. The interior is really nice, actually. If you like a kind of techie Japanese interior.
That is hideous.
Yeah. It is set of Venetian blinds, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm trying to find the words that I could actually say in polite company.
I don't know whether you need to dust them, you know. like you do if you have home Venetian blinds. You have to get one of those special
nasty
tools. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway,
it looks like a windmill's collapsed. That's just, oh dear. No.
Well, Mike, I propose it as one of the finest road cars. Mike's showing me a picture. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah. I mean, all the proportions are wrong, and it's not good. But as a vehicle, it's superb. You know what? Yeah. Because it works. It does the job of transportation. And so the truth, look, I'm being a bit silly calling it the world's best road car, but only in the same way so are you by calling or arguing the case for the McLaren F1. They're both, you know, they're not either of them the finest road car, but if you combine some of the elements,
they're very much the opposite ends of the spectrum, aren't they?
Yeah, and isn't the truth always somewhere in between? How about this then? Look, I'll tell you what, I'll propose something a little bit more sensible.
Yes, make me feel clean again, Tony. Come up with something else.
And it's quite specific. So it's a specific model of a specific car with a specific engine.
That's the way we like them.
Mm-hmm. It is, I propose, the Jaguar XJ40... Mm-hmm. Range of XJ6s, but not a 6, a 12, the V12 version.
Ooh, now you're talking.
Mm-hmm. So the XJ40, to bring you up to speed if you're not up to speed, was the replacement for the Series 3 XJ6. You know, the one that went on for literally ever. Mm. Started, obviously, as the Series 1. Bumper got moved a bit higher to the Series 2. Series 3 got the pepper pot alloys. There's my summary of the whole of Jaguar XJ6 development. What do you think of that?
It's like time travel.
Yeah, because it's succinct.
My favourite, I'm sure it's not true, story about the XJ40. And you have to be able to sort of picture the car. So again, and I say, oh, we'll put a photo up. Of course we won't. We'll forget. But basically, Google XJ40. But the idea, or the story I was told by somebody at Jaguar, mark you, was that when they did the development car and the styling buck, and they put it on an aircraft and sent it over to, I'm going to say Italy, but wherever it was that did like the final body stuff. And this guy was utterly convinced and swore it was true that on the plane ride over, the styling buck got a little bit knocked. And that's the reason that the boot line is so much lower than the front, is that somebody either sat on it or knocked it or dropped a ramp on it, and that's why the boot lines flow so much further down on an XJ40. Now, I have no idea if that's true or not. I'm probably not, but I'm throwing it in as a fact so I can
contribute.
It's
a good old tale. Yeah, it came in 1986. It was launched and lived out till 94. In truth, the models afterwards, which were very, very pretty, X300s they were. They were really actually just developments of the XJ40 themselves. It was a reskin. So it did live quite a bit longer. But my word, did it take Jaguar a long while to launch it. They started development on the XJ40 in the 70s. Mm. And, anyone who knows anything about the British car industry knows that the 70s and particularly early 80s was not exactly what one would call a golden period. In terms of development funding and general sort of cohesiveness. But anyway,
the previous model had been launched in 68. So they had obviously already been developing when that was launched in 68. They must have hit the ground running probably 67, 68 to get the XJ40 beginning.
Exactly, because that's the way it normally works, isn't it? You know, you launch it. It's a little bit like clothes, you know, fashion. What do they say? They're not working on next summer. They're working on the winter after or whatever. Yeah. Launched with 2.9 and 3.6 AJ6 engines. Later turned sort of bored out to be 3.2 and 4s. The 2.9, I had a 2.9, actually. I had a poverty spec 2.9 XJ40. And I loved it, except for the engine. I loved the cloth seats, which were so itchy you couldn't wear shorts. But I love the look of them.
You can't wear shorts anyway. You've had that. Police told you about that.
It was not a good idea, the 2.9. It was a single overhead cam, whereas the 3.6, 3.2 and 4 were all twin overhead cams, and they were much, much sprightlier. It wouldn't stop me from having another 2.9, but I would have my eyes wide open that it was thirsty, you know, because you had to work it so hard. And slow, you know, it offered next to nothing really, other than a decent bit of refinement. But most of them are autos. The classic ZF 4HP 22 box that goes in, you know, 9 out of 10 cars of that period. But the interesting thing about the auto, you could get a manual, but they were pretty rare. It was the first model, I think, to have the J gate. So where you know, the automatic shifter, you can do in any number of different ways, can't you? You can have a button to stop you from accidentally putting it into reverse. Mercedes used to have that zigzag gate, so you had to deliberately move it through. And Jag went for a completely different routine where, imagine literally a letter J, where park is top right, then reverse, then neutral, then drive, bottom right. Knock it across, keep going to the left, also drive, and then forward to go down the gears. I thought the J gate was an absolute masterpiece of design. It was quick to get it into drive. You couldn't have an accident easily with it. You'd have to be pretty dumb to manage that. And you could knock it across. We're talking about way pre-paddle and whatnot here, but you could knock it across and have some kind of manual control very quickly and very easily. Really good design. Designed by a guy, I think, correct. Now, you might know, but this is just from memory, a guy called Jim Randall. He was, okay, you're looking, you don't know. But I'm pretty sure.
I'm rabbit in headlights here, Tony. Yeah. I'm a deer on a runway.
he was called, I'm pretty certain, Jim Randall, this chap. He was one of the engineers or designers. That's where my knowledge runs out. But it was known, instead of the J gate internally, it was known as the Randall handle. So if you ever see a Jag with the J-gate pattern, which a lot of them had of that period, it's the Randall handle. Pity they dumped that. Anyway, back to the engine. They developed it during this period of BL strife, British Leyland strife. And when they exited British Leyland, they were free to, you know, launch the XJ40. And they didn't want the Rover V8 foisted problem.
I was going to throw in my one little bit of knowledge about this, but I will let you carry on.
Let me have
I was going to say, I'll stop you there, Tony, with an interesting fact, but you can actually probably make it a fact.
So. Yeah, I can't make it interesting, but Jaguar, proudly, we're Jag, and you know we're not, you know, we're above all of this, and we certainly don't want a Rover engine that was a Buick engine and whatnot. So they designed specifically designed the engine bay so that it couldn't fit the Rover V8. It could only take the straight six engine, the AJ6 that they were going to put in it, which was fine. And that worked well enough as a concept. It stopped the Rover V8 from getting into the engine bay, right until the moment that they wanted to put in the V12, their beautiful first mass-produced V12 engine. They wanted to put that in, and there was a problem, of course. It didn't fit.
Yeah. Except nobody ever bothered to measure to see if the V8 would fit.
Right.
And of course it did.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
Well, they just measured it in millimetres, not inches.
No, they just didn't want the Rover V8 being put in a Jag. Mm-hmm. So they said all the engine bay won't fit. They won't fit a V8. The V8's too wide or too long or whatever it was. Presumably is too wide with the exhaust manifolds. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever bothered to check.
So it does fit, does it?
I'm told, yeah. I've never tried it myself, but I'm certainly, again, having spoken to a few engineers at Jag over the years, they all sort of went like, yeah, that's what we told them, and they never bothered to measure it.
Wonderful. Oh, that's good, because that means people like me and journalists all over still spout that story, but actually it's may or may not be exactly true.
It maybe depends who you speak, like, but certainly I've had people who have said that to me. Yes, of course it would have fitted. We didn't want to put the Rover engine in a Jag.
Nice.
If you know better, car-chum at .com.
Yep. should we do that properly? www.car-chum.com. You can join in there. There's a section to leave a clean message.
If you work for Jag or have a spare Rover V8 and an XJ40 lying around your yard and a tape measure.
In inches and millimetres. So anyway, they discovered that their old V12, beautiful engine, wouldn't fit. They'd been running it in the when did they start? Did it go in the Series 1? I can't remember. But anyway, it went right the way through into the Series 3. And they kept Series 3 production running. While they were, sledgehammering the bulkhead and wings of the XJ40 to make it fit, and they actually kept selling. So the venerable old Series 3 carried on until actually 93. So in 93 you could buy a 5.3 liter V12 Jaguar that really was a kind of late 60s car that had been sort of gussied up. It was basically the same car. One of those little anomalies, but it was a beautiful car still. Very good.
My favourite version, for no reason other than I just love the name, was the Daimler version, which they called, of course, the 66.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful name. Daimler 66. Yeah, absolutely. But that engine went in everything. Went in the E-Type, of course, latterly. Some people loved it in there, some people
the
didn't.
Series 3, yeah. I was one of the people who didn't.
Right.
It turned a sports car into not even a GT. It turned a sports car into a really, really heavy Jag. Front heavy, very, very hot Jag.
Well, it was very hot. I've driven one of those, a V12 Jag, through central London traffic. You're not watching the car in front. You're way too busy with the temperature gauge. It's a heavy car. I think it's slightly unfair. I quite like it. It's got a relaxed gait about it. You know, it isn't a sports car. No. Yeah.
What it is very good for is getting away quick. I was sat at traffic lights once with a friend in a V12 E-Type, and it was like roadworks, and the lights changed, and I hadn't realised traffic's building up behind me. And he said, light's green. And I stupidly, it was a manual, dumped the clutch and the accelerator, and the thing just went sideways. We took off like, three quarters of the way across the road. Whoa! Lots of torque.
Not a bad car.
But I would sooner have one of the straight sixes. I think the V12 in the E-Type was a mistake. But in the XJS,
fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah, fabulous car. Yeah. So that engine, silkily purred away in the XJS, the Series 3, E-Type, as you said.
Bubbled away, really, didn't it?
Guzzled away. And then ended up, it wasn't, because it made it into the X300 shape as well, actually. Both of them six litre. Yes. But anyway, the XJ40 was effectively the last hurrah for it. 6 litre. Beautiful, beautiful engine. Not hugely powerful by today's standards for a 6-cylinder, but by the end of production, obviously, it's most powerful. It was like 330 or something horsepower. Not vast, but it wasn't really about that. It was about smooth and refined progress.
Elegance.
Yeah, elegance. But I mean, the economy, I do take slight task with people that say that, it's like the thirstiest thing ever made. It's not really. If you sit in traffic, of course, it's just going to sit there and glug away. But if you drive the thing sensibly, it's just a big engine. It's no better, no worse than anything else. Anyway, so I would propose the XJ40. There's lots of other stuff to talk about the XJ40, and perhaps we will do one day the dashboard and
Let's do a show just on Jags.
Yeah, let's do a Jag show. Yeah, let's save that. But anyway, I propose that as being a pretty damn fine road car.
I can't argue with you, to be honest. I'm yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
What, more than the Camry?
Ooh, see thou? Yes. Oh, God, yes. No! I don't think there's anything you could suggest. Like, you know, I'm more on the Prius than the Camry. Okay, so what I've got here, literally, in my hand.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, you know, sound effects too. That's what I'm here for. I made a list of cars that I thought could fit the bill of best road car ever made. Okay. And then I did a bit of that there research. And weirdly enough, some of them were on both lists. So I'm going to throw out here. I mean, the most bizarre one, there is a website, and I wish I'd written it down. There is a website that thinks the best road car ever made was the BMW E28 524 TD diesel. I was scrolling down it, and, you know, long-time listeners, should there be any, will know that Tony and I are both massive fans of the 5 Series BMW E28. So I'm scrolling down it, la-da-da-da-da. It's an E28! Wow! Look, it's got to be an M5. It's a diesel? 524 diesel E28?
It's good, but it's not that good.
So, yeah, exactly. Already said Beetle. Golf GTI?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask, but I know what the answer will be. And honestly, this was on a website, Saab 9000.
Yeah, extremely good car. Yeah. Comfortable. Oh, no, I won't start.
No shock. No shocker there, then. Peugeot 205 GTI. Yes.
I caveat that slightly in my voice because I think probably the Golf is more deserving, the Mark 1.
Don't know, 1.9 GTI. 1.9 was a fabulous, fabulous car.
Yeah. A little bit flimsy, though, you see.
Yeah,
exactly. Whereas you don't get that sense with the Mark 1 and Mark 2 Golf.
You get more metal in a Kit Kat wrapper than you do in a 205 GTI. But fabulous, you know, suspension, everything wonderful. Honestly, I didn't write this list. I'm just agreeing with bits of it. But somebody suggested the Crown Vic. The Crown Victoria.
For Crown Victoria. Well, I mean, yeah. Police forces across the United States would agree with you.
We've said it before. If you're looking for a big, decent, well-built car, look at what the police used to drive.
Yeah, totally.
We already touched on it, Toyota Prius, and we knocked that out because, one, it's a Prius, and two, you can't fit a tow bar. I'm happy with that. No further discussion. Porsche Boxster.
In fun terms, yes. If we're talking the early ones, but not in terms of development of the engine. I mean,
does everything well.
Except for last.
I don't know. No, they're not bad. Not bad.
Some of them don't.
Just because you had a series of 911s and looked down on them.
Learned the hard way. Yeah.
This is kind of becoming a bit of a list of cars that I like anyway, which is probably why I seized on doing this. Citroen 2CV.
Yeah.
Volvo 240.
Yeah.
Citroen DS. Yeah. I swear I found all these on websites. I didn't just make this list.
No. I'm with all of these. Yeah. Which I'm agreeing with all of them.
With the next choice, Subaru Outback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like it, but it's not a choice. I tell you what,
in H6 configuration, you know, where you've got the flat six boxer engine, absolute cracker. Yeah, every bit as good fun as an Impreza, but much more usable. Yeah, totally.
And available in a useful estate as well.
Yeah, yeah.
With a bit more room in it than an Impreza. Yeah. Again, underlining the fact that I didn't make this list, Tesla Model 3, whatever that is.
Tesla Model Tumbleweed. 3 has what it is one of the most successful car chum videos on, on social media generally, is me opening the charging flap of a Tesla 3. I mean, I don't know what that says about the content of our program, but
I think it's maybe the hashtag 3, hashtag opening, hashtag flap.
Yeah.
A really good one that I didn't think about and a car that we need to discuss in the future. NSU RO80.
Lovely car.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We need to put that on the list.
Put it on a list that doesn't exist. Yeah.
Rapidly coming down them quickly again. Ferrari, Dino, I love them. Won't hear a word against them. I think you'll agree here. Lotus Elise.
Yep. Nice car. Going up in value.
Again, I think you'll agree. Audi Quattro.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I haven't disagreed with a single one that you've said so far.
I know. And finally, I'll spring this on you slightly, but I'm going to put in what I think is perhaps my vote for potentially best road car ever.
Go on.
And I will sit in silence and listen to whichever way you vote this. But Caterham. Now, you've got one.
Yeah.
At the moment. I think they're great, and I know you own one and have built one. So
I do think they're great, and they're amazing to drive. There is nothing else like them to drive. I'm sure aerial atoms and that sort of stuff. Yeah, they are terrific, but they don't look as, you know, if you like the look of the old 7, they're fantastic.
But if you're a driver, which mm-hmm. you very much mm-hmm. are.
Mm.
I don't think there's anything else for that sort of price range that could be superior in, you know, provided you're fairly hardy. So you're a Land Rover level of comfort person. I think you will struggle to get more bang for the buck than a Caterham for. And I know someone who dailied one through the winter.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, that does include me. Actually, I did commute to London.
Oh, with you as well.
For a month in November. I have to say, it was one of the most miserable experiences. It was awful.
It stunted your growth, but
and it stunts your love for the car because it's just awful. You know, it's just horrible. But you know, right road, right weather. Yeah, absolutely fantastic, and you don't have to go that far. And that's one of the things I love about them, you know, whereas a lot of the super hypercar stuff, you have to go, or even just talented modern saloons, you have to go so fast mm-hmm. to get any feedback from the thing that there's actually, you know, engine overcoming weight, and there's you know, tires, you know, being overwhelmed by demand, etc. You have to get to such a point that you're doing such ridiculous speeds that the mm-hmm. fun is killed, if nothing else is, simply by that. So yes, the Caterham and its, you know, competitors, you don't have to be going fast, and that's, you know, which is a good job, because if you take it off the road, then, you know.
What is the engine in yours? Just sort of quick.
2 litres Ford twin cam
Z-Tec.
So there's Z-Tex, Duratex. Yeah. You know, there's all manner of different ones, but yeah. Which is enough, but it's enough. You know, 170. I don't think it's that, but 150 horsepower. You know, or whatever. That's plenty, because you're only talking about 600-800 kilograms. You know,
it weighs about as much as a packet of crisps, doesn't it?
Yeah,
really,
600-700. Let's stick that on the list as well, because I think kit cars and specialist vehicles might be an interesting topic. Yeah, one day.
Well, I thought this might lead into it, but I thought that was a nice way to sort of end, because I don't own a Caterham, but I think if I was a better driver, if my younger years were ahead of me, it's certainly, I think it has to be on a list of mm-hmm. the ultimate road cars. Mm-hmm. I think it's not complete without mention of Caterham.
No, absolutely.
Possibly
a Morgan. Good inclusion. We'd add Morgan to that list of specialist cars to talk about. I think that would make an interesting show. Well, I think it would be interesting.
I do.
So I posed the question initially. You've answered your side of it about these friends who are driving down, you know, through France and Italy and back up through Austria or wherever they're going to come. I'm guessing that bit. I thought, what car would I do it in? I thought long and hard about this because I had nothing better to do. And do you know what I came up with?
I believe you.
I came up with something that isn't on my list. No.
No.
No, because you've got the hairpins, you've got the tunnels, and it was the tunnels that spurred me on to say...
Dodge Charger.
No. I'm beginning to get a bit of a thing for...
Fiat Ritmo.
No. a Jensen Interceptor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Yeah,
FF, you mean, FF,
no,
FF or,
don't need the
no.
FF, don't need the FF.
Don't need don't the four-wheel drive. No,
no, don't need that. No, keep it simple. Just, I thought, what a wonderful vehicle to tour in the summer. How lovely. You've got all the space for your luggage in the back under that weird-shaped glass lift-back thing.
You've, that massive greenhouse in the back that you cook tomatoes in. Yes.
Yeah. You do have aircon in them. You've got leather. Yes. You've got comfort. You've got either a 6.3 or a 7.2, is it?
7.2, yeah. 383 or 440 Chrysler V8. Yep.
Yeah. To provide motivation. And I just thought, what a lovely way to tour. So ever since that thought, it was only about 4 or 5 days ago, I've been thinking, Jen, how is it? Oh, I'd like an Interceptor.
Mm. And possibly the best name ever.
Yes, absolutely.
Name badge ever put on a car.
See, unlike those rambling articles that go nowhere and only have a final destination of a fence, Car Chum will deliver a verdict. Who'd have thought a close-run thing between a Camry and an Interceptor? Thanks for listening again. Car Chum will be back in a fortnight. And if you need more of whatever it is we do right in between times, then you can always download a previous episode or meet and greet us on the website or socials. Just search Car Chum and you'll find us. Until then, pip pip.